The views expressed in the following podcast are not necessarily the views of the United States Air Force or the Air Force Reserve, but rather the perspectives of the individual speakers. No endorsement of any particular person, business, or interest is ever intended.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Ready, Set, Airlift. I'm your host, Julian Hernandez, from the 433rd Airlift Wing Public Affairs Office. This month, we wanted to take a deeper dive into what it takes to keep the Alamo Wing's C-5s flying. I sat down with one of the wing's senior maintenance leaders, Major Carlos Rocha, for his perspective of the Alamo Wing maintenance community. All right, Major Rocha, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Ready, Set, Airlift. I hear some congratulations are in order as you will be officially taking over as the commander of the aircraft maintenance squadron starting March 1st.
Yeah, that is correct. 1 March, I've been serving here in an interim capacity. Prior to that, director of operations for both AMXS and the MXS.
Excellent. You've only been with the 433rd for about a year now. So for some airmen in the unit who maybe haven't had a chance to meet you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I joined the Air Force back in 2001. I was active duty, avionics troops at first, and kept going through there, volunteered to be a tech school instructor after the first duty assignment. Loved it. One of the best jobs I think I've had over my career. Had a few ARTs come through when I was teaching the courses there as Shepherd, and inquired into the program. So then in 2008, joined the ART program, started at March Air Reserve Base, did that for a while, got my taste of the flight line, always in maintenance. From there, just kind of progressed through the maintenance ladder, so to speak, eventually becoming expediter, production superintendent. And then eventually I went to Tinker, was there as the QA chief, quality assurance chief. And there was an opportunity to commission while I was there as an ART officer, Air Reserve technician, and became the maintenance group executive officer. Did that job, also got spun up as a maintenance officer, and then transitioned back to March as the DO, Director of Operations for March C-17s, and eventually came here to the 433rd. I also had in between a short stint as the numbered Air Force exec as well.
Awesome. Did you have a San Antonio connection before coming down?
I did. So actually, my folks were down here. They kind of found their forever home down here in San Antonio. They have their government jobs, and they wanted to retire down here. So I already had a little bit of a connection. And, you know, it's a small Air Force, so there was a few people that I also knew here.
Fantastic. And, you know, I wanted to circle back. Why did you join the Air Force back in, what did you say, 01?
In 2001, I did. So the funny reason, you know, I did give college a try, right? And I wasn't so great at it at first, you know, maybe it wasn't the path I was supposed to go down. And I kind of promised my folks, you know, hey, if I'm not doing so great at this, maybe I need a little bit more direction, get out of my comfort zone. And I joined the military. I was in junior ROTC all through high school, so I already kind of had an idea of what to expect. So really, it's just because I was not very good at school at first. And it was great because it joining the military gave me that structure that I think I needed. And now here I am.
It's good you had a backup plan. You know, I knew a lot of people in college who went to college, weren't really sure about it. And then they had no backup plan. And when college didn't work out for them, they were in the wind. You went in there with a backup plan, which is all you can really ever do. I want to go ahead and transition over to our main point of conversation today, which is gaining a little bit more of an understanding about maintenance. It's such a crucial component of everything that goes on here at the wing. But in my time here, I've gotten a sense that maybe folks outside the maintainer community don't have a deep understanding of exactly everything it takes to keep the fleet going and meet mission and make it happen, right? So I figured this is a great opportunity to talk to a subject matter expert and give some exposure and some much needed recognition to the hard work that goes on in the maintenance community. So let's start with the basic question, right? Like, what does it take to keep the fleet at the 433rd here running?
Appreciate, you know, getting called a subject matter expert. That's always great, right? But so a unit like the 433rd, it's a lot of effort, dedication and expertise from the maintenance team. Pretty unique, and hopefully we can delve into it here and later in the conversation. But the mission here is unique, right? It's a bit of a dual mission. It involves a wide range of activities, routine inspections, repairs, replacement of parts, and even more complex tests like engine overhauls and avionics upgrades. So the maintenance team, it's always working. Main goal that we strive for is to ensure that every aircraft is airworthy and that it meets strict safety and performance standards. So how do we get there? How do we get to the airworthy, to the strict safety and performance standards? So that involves a combination of different types of maintenance, right? So you have your preventive maintenance, corrective maintenance, and predictive maintenance. So your preventive maintenance includes all the scheduled inspections and repairs to prevent any problems from arising, right? Kind of like tuning up your car. Corrective maintenance involves the fixing of issues that they're already there. Hey, you know, we're going to try to go flying on a sortie and the plane broke, so we need to fix it right then and there. And then there's predictive maintenance, which is always the trickier one, but that's where we kind of put on our government-issued brains, right? And use data and analytics to anticipate and prevent potential problems before they occur, looking at trends. Also, the maintenance team, we also have to stay up to date with, the latest technical bulletins, regulations, and procedures, and work closely with other units such as operations, right? Operations is probably one of the ones we work with the most because they're the ones that fly the planes. Logistics, hey, there's always seamless coordination and communication, right? Communicate. The team also has to be able to troubleshoot and resolve various complex technical issues because sometimes problems, they go across multiple systems and often under, tight deadlines with limited resources and parts.
So it sounds like pretty much most of the aircraft are in some phase of the maintenance cycle at any time. Like at all times, the aircraft are undergoing one of the three types of maintenance, right?
That is correct.
Talk about the workload that puts on the unit. I mean, didn't maintenance have to bring on like a third shift, something that's like a little different than other parts of the wing, right? There's maintainers working pretty much around the clock.
Correct. So that's something we had to adapt to. So if you look at just the folks that are, our workers, our folks that are turning wrenches, so there's about 10 career fields out there, highly specialized mechanics that work daily on aircraft systems such as hydraulics, engines, avionics, electrical, environmental, and the airframe, right? And that's just not even naming all 10. And then on top of that, you have another 10 or so specialties just to schedule the maintenance, run diagnostics, do the analysis, support training, and manage all the other aspects of maintenance. And then also, not only do we have to compete with the host unit, other C5 units, the numbered Air Force, headquarters for resources, that just adds even more layers to those challenges to our mission, but it's nothing that we can't handle. And we still manage to launch aircraft just about every day. But overall, keeping the fleet operational, it requires a deep understanding of the aircraft systems, strong work ethic, and a commitment to safety and excellence in all we do.
And from my time here, I'm coming to understand the 433rd is even more challenging than perhaps a different C5 unit because there's the double mission, right? This is the schoolhouse, all the crews coming through for training, but we also have the 68th Airless Squadron flying operational missions as required. To boot, I think our fleet is a little smaller than some of the other C5 units.
Mm-hmm. We have the dual mission with, like you said, the 356 and the 68th, right? So what does that look like, right? What does that do to, or how does that affect our maintenance workflow? So for us, it's a couple things. So it's an increased aircraft utilization, right? So with the unit's dual mission, the aircraft are utilized for both training and operational purposes. So this means that the maintenance team must be able to support higher operational tempo more so than some of the other bases, kind of like we were saying on the C5 side, with more flights and more frequent maintenance. So more flying, it's going to break down. And we got to do what we got to do to get those fixed as quick as possible. So the challenge here is that the aircraft, they're torn between supporting Air Mobility Command and the formal training unit.
So, sir, with all that, requirement that needs to be met, both operationally and training-wise, I'm guessing some maintenance tasks are more important than others. So you guys have to make some decisions as to what to work on to ensure the operations keep flowing and training.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of ties back into the dual mission. So the prioritization of maintenance tasks. So it's all based on the competing demands of the training and the operational missions, right? It can be challenging, and the team has to balance the need to support training operations with the need to ensure that the operational aircraft are available to support mission requirements. So the competing priorities are, you know, they're here at the base level, and the higher the cause or the higher the priority, well, hey, that's what's going to get the parts. That's what's going to get the manpower and the resources directed towards it. The unit is easily probably one of the busiest in the Air Force, launching aircraft just about every day of the week and multiple times per day. And that's almost a little unheard of for a heavy. Luckily, we have some of the best mechanics here, no doubt. And adding to that is the increased complexity, right? So to the maintenance workflow. So as a team, you know, they have to manage multiple maintenance schedules, track multiple aircraft configurations, and ensure that maintenance tasks are completed timely, efficiently. You know, I've already mentioned resource allocation. And then I would say to kind of wrap all that up, it takes communication and coordination. The maintenance team, it has to communicate and coordinate effectively with all the other units, with ops, with logistics, with training, a mission support group, to ensure that everything is completed, again, timely, efficiently. And that requires a strong relationships and clear communication channels. So, but overall, the 433rd's dual mission is, as a formal training unit and as an operational unit, it presents unique challenges for the maintenance workflow. But with effective planning, communication, resource allocation, the team, it can ensure that, hey, we're able to support both missions and maintain the high level of readiness and availability required.
I want to touch more on the topic of resource allocation, because I feel like one of the terms that's out there right now is resource constrained environment, right? And so I'm pretty much trying to do more with less. I wanted to get your perspective as an aircraft maintenance commander. How is that reality of resource constraint affecting what you do at the aircraft maintenance level?
So do more with less, right? I think that's kind of how they, most of the time, they phrase that particular question, or how it comes out. How does that affect maintenance? So with us, it just shifts around our priorities. So with those constraints in place, whether it's parts, whether it's funds, whether it's manpower, it just makes us dig down deeper into the prioritization part of maintenance tasks or the missions. And sometimes we also have to work hand in hand with ops, because we have to let them know what we can provide versus their request, right? Because they're the customer. Ultimately, ops, operations, they're the customer, and we're trying to fulfill that request for them. But if we have constraints, we have to communicate that clearly, so that way they can prioritize and let us know, okay, this is what you can give, this is what we're going to ask for then, and then we work from there. So it's just back and forth, especially with operations.
Yeah, no, a lot going on. And, you know, as you mentioned, I think the 433rd is unique with that dual commitment of having to balance a sustained recurring training requirement, but then unpredictable operational requirements that come down as needed, and probably at the worst possible time. When the training schedule is hot, that's probably when a mission is going to come down.
It exactly correct. And so with the, you know, the formal training unit, it's sometimes a little bit easier to predict, because they have their curriculum that they follow. So sometimes we can sit down and synergize their schedule versus what we can provide on the long range schedule that we maintain.
Well, sir, you know, we're talking about constraints, and really in today's operational environment, that is just one of many things that is likely to be on the mind of members. But, you know, as a maintenance leader specifically, what do you feel are some of the things that your maintainers are thinking about or concerned about right now?
So I'll try to, it's probably a lot, right? But
let's do like top three.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's keep it to a top three. So been in the maintenance world for a while now, right? 24 years now, goes by fast. But for me, top three concerns here, right? We're talking about the Alamo Wing maintainers. So one of the first ones I think that's on their minds is the workforce development and the retention, right? So they, maintainers, they get concerned with the challenges of recruiting, training, and retaining skilled technicians, because, you know, there's turnover, right? We're always competing with, if you were to go outside of our gates, you know, there's competing aerodynamic companies, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, those type of folks. So the retention is always there. And so other concerns along with that is the availability of training opportunities and competitiveness of pay and benefits and the need to develop and promote from within. So a lot of those factors go into the retention portion and the development, because I've discovered that for the most part, folks that are here, they want to be here and they want to continue growing here in the maintenance group. So how do we as leaders do that? Right. And that's one of our challenges. And then we're always trying to better improve processes, better identify and hear our maintainers at the ground level and hearing what they have to say. So, hey, we can take some action as senior leadership. And then along with all of that too, with the retention piece, there's the addition of more manning, you know, to handle the grind of the day-to-day operations. So that was one. I think that's number one, right, is better pay, better benefits, more folks. The second one is probably the readiness and availability. And what I mean by that is maintainers, I think they get concerned about ensuring that the fleet is ready and available to meet the operational demands, right? So earlier you were talking about the resource constraints. I think that's a very real concern for Alamo Wing maintainers, is the fleet ready and available. And that's concerns about the aircraft availability, the maintenance backlogs, and the ability to respond quickly to unexpected issues or repairs that may need to happen with the aircraft. Which leads into my third one, is the aging aircraft and sustainment. So the C-5 Super Galaxy, it's an aging platform, right? Like a lot of our aircraft out there, and maintainers, they get concerned about the challenges of sustaining and maintaining the aircraft over the long term. And that includes concerns about parts availability, the aircraft becoming obsolete, and the need to develop and implement new maintenance strategies and techniques, considering some of the constraints that we do run into. So for me, those are kind of my top three.
I want to dig into that part about the platform itself, because I am personally fascinated by the C-5 as someone who knew not much about it at all until about a year and a half ago. But I before we get there, you know, I want to talk about that first point about workforce development and retention. You've been sitting in the command seat in an acting capacity, but now you're going to take the reins full on. Do you have anything in mind that you plan to implement to sort of move things in the direction you want them to go as far as workforce development and retention?
So on the retention piece, one of my biggest concerns is the competitiveness of pay. How do we make that better for our workforce here specifically? And that's like a wage grade survey. That's going on to the community and gathering the data, getting with our local union, working hand in hand with them so we can get that survey done and increase the wages. It's been done in the past. That's definitely a hyper focus for me, is to make sure that the wages get increased for our workers, because they are out there jobbing out every day. So pay, right? Because everyone always, pay is big for everyone. The development piece. So that's the other part. So with that, the Air Reserve Technician is unique because it's almost two jobs in one, right? So you have your civilian part and then you have your military part. So how do we develop those folks? What I've been implementing on the UTA since I've been in the sea is town halls, talking with the different tiers. So talking with the airmen, the NCO, and the senior NCO tiers, hearing what they have to say about what's going on, almost like a climate survey, right, on a UTA. But I'm targeting specific tiers so I can hear it at each different level. And it's really interesting because you have it at the airman level, and the overall theme with the airmen is in the treatment, how they're being treated, how they feel. The NCOs were concerned about not so much about how they're being treated, but it's now they're more concerned about processes. And then the senior NCO tier, they're giving feedback, and for them it's more they want to be developed. They want to get the mentoring, and they hear the treatment piece for the airmen, and they hear the process piece for the NCOs. But how do we pull it all together? So having those town halls, hearing the concerns, definitely taking action on things that we can is what we try to do. And then eventually turn those sessions where we're hearing, you know, kind of hearing the feedback, also eventually evolve them into mentoring sessions as well. So teaching the airmen, hey, this is how you access your EPB, or this is how you access this data. And then with the NCOs, you know, hey, this is how you write the narrative statements or write an award. Senior NCOs, hey, this is the things you should be doing to QC these packages or these awards or these, you know, higher level functions that you should be doing for a senior NCO. So at first, it's going to be a feedback session and then eventually evolve into mentoring or highlighting certain things or skills that we can help improve with our force and develop them. So hopefully that makes them feel like, hey, senior leadership cares, right? Because if we're not developing our folks, then, you know, we're not really doing our job. So
absolutely. And, you know, I think it's good that there's a tangible plan. You know, I think people can have more patience when they feel like there's a process. And yes, we may have to wait a little bit for the process to come together. But, you know, like you mentioned, the wage grade survey, that's a tangible thing with a timeline for execution and when expectations for it to be completed. You know, more or less you can set when those expectations are. So moving in the right direction, or at least a plan to get things moving in the right direction, which is important. Want to jump to that other piece we were discussing about the aging C5, right? An incredible platform with incredible capabilities, but it's been around since the A models came out in 1968, if I'm remembering off the top of my head correctly.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Even in my short time around the C5 community, you know, I've heard the rumor mill, the water cooler talk of, are they going to get rid of the C5? Is there another aircraft that can take care of this capability? What's going to happen to C5s? I think from where I sit, it seems safe to say the C5's not going anywhere for a few years. But what's your take as someone who works day to day on this airframe?
So for that number three concern, right, I think is where I mentioned it. I don't think it's going anywhere. That's, to me, the bottom line. It kind of like you were mentioning, I hadn't had too much exposure with the C5. So I've been very involved with C-17s and 135s throughout my career. And so this was a new MDS or a new aircraft airframe to learn. And it's definitely interesting. I don't see it going away. But the biggest challenge is for, you know, the aircraft availability that we run into. It comes down to the three Ps. It comes down to people, parts, and planes. And so we got the planes. We're working on the people piece. But the parts, so that one of the advantage probably that the other airframes have, like the 17s and the 135s, they always have those parts available. So that's kind of for us one of the constraints at the moment. But they're working many initiatives so we can get back on pace.
From my understanding, the efforts to oust the C5 ultimately failed because guess what? There's not another airframe that can do the same things that the C5 can do. So yeah, let's explore that a little bit more. You know, those unique capabilities of the C5. I mean, I for one was impressed that you could put tanks on it as a guy who came from the Army.
Yeah. So I will say that the Super Galaxy, it's iconic, right? It's a big plane and a versatile platform. And as you mentioned, it's played a critical role in military operations for decades. So it's going to continue being an important part of the military's airlift capabilities for many, many years to come, probably once we're both retired. But it has undergone significant modernization, upgrade efforts in recent years, including the addition of new engines, avionics, and other systems. And the upgrades have improved the aircraft's performance, reliability, and maintainability, and extend its service life, like we've done with a lot of other aircraft in our fleet. But unique capabilities, right? So you're asking about unique capabilities of why it's an essential part of the military's airlift fleet. So it has a large cargo capacity, large range, and again, can't say enough about the versatility of it to make it an ideal platform for a wide range of missions, from strategic airlift to humanitarian assistance and disaster relief, which we've executed here in recent months. So challenges ahead, including the need to address, like we've already talked about, the ongoing maintenance and sustainment issues. But again, the Super Galaxy is going to be a vital part of the airlift capabilities. For example, you said it about the tanks. So the Army and the Navy need the C5 to move some of their outsized cargo. So kind of like the tanks. Not to mention it has double the space of a C-17, and C-17s are also very big aircraft. I mean, I've worked around them for many, many years, and can be quickly used to build up a theater of operations in support of humanitarian effort or contingency. So every year, more upgrades are added to the C-5, and I suspect, kind of like the B-52 bomber, that the C-5, it's going to be around longer than anyone can predict. Combined with the expertise and dedication of the maintainers who work on it, it's an indispensable asset for the military.
I've been lucky to go on quite a few good missions in my short time with the unit, but hands down, my favorite thus far was when we got a chance to fly some humanitarian supplies down to Panama. I think it was like 172,000 pounds of food flown down to Panama through the Denton program, humanitarian assistance. And just, we had an opportunity to see the humanitarian crews who were taking the delivery. You know, they got to see the aircraft come on and deliver, you know, these pallets after pallets of food, and the look on their face said it all. You know, I think in my interview with one of the representatives, he said, I wish we could get one of these planes here with food every day. It would solve our problems. So it is amazing to see, you know, the capabilities of the C-5 used for something so tangibly good. That being said, now that we've gotten a better understanding of what it is that maintenance does and the unique challenges and capabilities that come with the C-5, the schoolhouse mission, balancing that with operational concerns, I have to imagine even in your time here, you've run into like just some basics that you wish people understood about maintenance that you're like, really? Like, how do people not know this about maintenance?
Maybe some things that, you know, like we wish that people knew, like outside of maintenance, right? That they would know, or that they just should know about us. So I'll try to keep the list shorter here for you. But maintenance is not just about fixing broken things, right? So maintenance is it's a proactive and preventive process that involves anticipating and preventing problems before they occur. It requires a deep understanding of the complex systems. Each of our maintainers has to have a thorough understanding of their particular aircraft systems, to include the mechanical, the electrical, and the avionics system, right? And I'm just kind of generalizing here. Maintenance is a team effort, right? It's a team sport here, and it is a lot of moving parts. It requires coordination and communication among multiple teams, and again, time operations and logistics and other support units back in there. It's challenging. Maintenance is challenging, but a rewarding, very rewarding career, kind of like you were saying, those tangibles, seeing the end result when we deliver the food for humanitarian relief, right? It is rewarding. And so with that, it's a unique combination of technical skills, problem-solving abilities, and attention to detail. And again, highly rewarding, especially for those who enjoy working with their hands and solving complex problems. And lastly, for this one here, we're sticking with C-5s. It is a huge aircraft, right? With more systems, I'm going to use my group commander's word, widgets. He likes that word, widgets. And more parts in motion than almost any other aircraft in the Air Force inventory. And those redundant systems, they allow the aircraft to break down from normal wear and tear, but also to continue flying safely. So our mechanics, they're highly specialized to repair the aircraft, and they're extremely busy given the size of the aircraft and its numerous systems. But at the end of the day, our number one goal is to provide a safe, flyable aircraft to our customers. In this instance, would be, you know, the crew that flies it.
Yeah. You know, I think every career field, there's just those things that to those in the career field, they're like obvious realities of their day to day. But the folks who are removed from it, they may not catch on to it, you know, until they're exposed to some experience that makes them realize. So I think that was one of my personal fascinations trying to do this conversation. I understand on a like 30,000 foot level, obviously maintaining the aircraft is vital to keeping it operating, but I definitely wanted to dive in deeper and be part of the solution, not the problem, understanding these things about maintenance and, you know, helping to spread the good word. I always like to try to close these conversations on a positive note. You know, we've discussed some things that are challenging or that we wish were better, or maybe make it difficult on the day-to-day to accomplish what it is to get done. But you kind of alluded to it earlier, our people are really what make the difference. And we have some, I mean, outstanding airmen of all specialties here, but definitely maintainers too. You know, what do you think is the greatest strength of the maintainer community here at the Alamo Wing?
So start with the experience and skilled technicians, right? Our workforce that's out there on the daily grind. The Alamo Wing Maintenance Group, it's composed of many, many technicians who have a deep understanding of the C-5 Super Galaxy and its systems. And being a reserve component here, it allows folks to be here a little bit longer. So you have a really, really strong community that some folks have known each other for decades, but it brings so much experience and good practices here and a good culture. So along with that, strong teamwork and coordination, another great strength here. Has a strong culture of teamwork and coordination with multiple teams working together almost seamlessly to ensure the success of the mission. innovative and proactive approach is needed, kind of tying back to kind of some of the resource constraints that you had mentioned earlier. So we have to be innovative and we have to be proactive with the things that we do. And here we have a reputation for being exactly that, with a focus on anticipating and trying to prevent problems before they occur. Always a commitment to safety and excellence is a strength here. We focus with ensuring that every aircraft is airworthy and meets those strict and safety and performance standards, as I mentioned earlier. And lastly, it's family. Working so often and close to one another, we feel like an extended family, right? Sometimes we see our military family more than we see our regular family. And it's huge. You know, I know for me personally, it's, you know, my military family has helped me through a lot of different things. And I see that here definitely over this, you know, little over a year that I've been here. It is a very much like an extended family here with the 433rd. You know, we often have like a mass breakfast or a lunch event, you know, just to socialize and thank everyone for their hard work on the senior leadership level. But they're out here every day jobbing. But for me, those are some of the strengths that I see.
I agree. I myself have, you know, kind of like you, relatively new to the unit. So I feel like I've been welcomed in my role as public affairs. And every time I work with whether it's maintainers or flight crews or medical personnel or any of the vast number of specialties that fall under MSG, you know, I feel like I'm always welcomed in, and the airmen have a good attitude and they're happy to answer my questions and they don't feel bothered by me, you know, taking 1,000 photos of them. So I agree. There's a good culture here and it's good to be around. I always like to close out too. Is there anything else you want to take an opportunity to mention here, whether it's for your airmen, for your NCOs, things that you want to work on in your term as commander?
So I'm gonna take a quote from our Air Force Chief of Staff, General David Alvin. He says that today, and I'll use this direct quote, today the Air Force once again finds itself at a critical juncture, an era of great power competition, marked by a new security environment and a rapidly evolving character of war and a formidable competitor. This new era requires understanding its challenges and the attributes needed to succeed, right? So that's what that the Chief of Staff says. So for me, it's embracing change, right? Not a choice, it's a necessity. The Air Force, we have to continue to reoptimize it's really what it all comes down to, being innovative, being proactive. It's all reoptimizing our efforts into an enterprise that's prepared for high-end conflicts, long-term strategic competition. And we do that here. And that's our part. That's what we do, our role here at the 433rd Maintenance Group, Alamo Wing, with the C5 Super Galaxy. And if I had to pass along any words of wisdom, it is set your goals. You can reach them within the Air Force. I started off as a A1C. And 20 plus years later, I would have never thought I would be sitting here, coming back full circle, right? Because we all start here, you know, the Air Force starts here at Lackland Air Force Base and basic military training. And so now to come back here as a commander, it's kind of awesome to come back full circle, but anything is attainable. You just got to focus and you just got to look for those opportunities sometimes, but ask questions. So there's my words of wisdom. Ask questions. No, there's no such thing as a bad question. You have to ask. If you don't know, ask. And you'll find folks, you'll find mentors, you'll find leaders that way by asking what you don't know. So that would be my words of wisdom. If I could tell A1C Rocha back in the day, what you should do is ask lots of questions. And you'd be surprised. You might find that mentor that kind of helps you get to that goal that you're ultimately looking for, whether it's in the Air Force or out.
I feel like you've been listening to the podcast because I always try to sneak that question in when I'm talking to leaders. So excellent. Great point to end on. Major Carlos Rocha, the new commander of the aircraft maintenance squadron here at the 433rd Airlift Wing. Sir, thank you so much for making time for me today.
Hey, thank you for the opportunity.
Some quick announcements before we go. In case you haven't heard, there have been significant updates to the Air Force uniform and grooming standards. Please make sure you consult with your leadership to ensure you are in compliance. guidance on implementing the recent executive orders issued by President Trump is now available online. Visit www.af.mil and look for a link on the front page titled DAF Executive Order Implementation. And don't forget, the 14th Annual Alamo Wing Awards Banquet is this weekend. AFRC Command Chief Nunez will be the guest speaker. The event starts at 1800 on Saturday, February 1st at the Gateway Club. That's going to do it for this episode of Ready, Set, Airlift. If you are enjoying the content on the show, please remember to like, subscribe, or follow the podcast on whichever platform you like to listen on. We are also always open to your feedback and comments on how we can make the show better. Thanks for sharing some of your time with us. I've been your host, Julian Hernandez. Until next time, take care.